This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
BTBN Play.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of PTBN Play on the PTBN Pop feed. This is Brad and I've got Jordan with me again today. Jordan, how are you?
I am doing great. I'm glad we are finally done talking about Sega.
Yeah, take a look at your emails. Because we're going to go back one last time here.
Oh, crap!
That's right. Well, some people thought that, but we're here today to wax about.
I don't think anybody's listening for our acting skills, huh?
No, that was our improv. You're all welcome. So we're here today to talk about our four defining games for the Sega Dreamcast. We have worked our way chronologically through from the Atari 2600 all the way up to now. We started in the mid '80s, and we are now in 1999 here with 99. That was the big selling point when the system released in the United States. And so, Jordan, we'll get started here. We'll talk a little bit about your experience early on with the system, and then we'll talk about some cool things about the console before we get into our four defining games.
Okay. So 99.99, I don't think is anywhere close to when I actually got the Dreamcast. I don't know exactly when I got it. It was a little pricey when it came out. Couple hundred bucks, and I didn't actually get it probably, I would say, for another year. I remember specifically I bought this game at Sam's Club in a bundle pack, so I got it when the price had dropped at one point, so I would guess maybe a year later, around 2000, because it was discontinued just a couple years later. This only had like a two-year run, so I'm gonna guess I got it sometime late 2000. That's my guess.
Okay.
But I joke about being happy to not talk about Sega, but if anyone's listened to any of our previous episodes, we've been excited to talk about the Dreamcast. Personal favorite for both of us, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, absolutely. I would say that, and we're wrestling fans too, so sometimes you have those hills that you really like to defend, and the Dreamcast is one for me. So, I think part of it was that we hit it at a good age, right? So we were 20, right? So I had it as a big portion of college, where again, there's a lot of time to play, and so I actually have a lot of fond memories of this one. And if I had to rank system wise on personal favorites, I think this one would probably be pretty high up in the top, purely from like my heart speaking, maybe more than my head, or until I looked at like all the different games I played on other systems. So
sure,
Yeah, so, and we did the Genesis, and we talked about the Sega CD and the 32X, and we did skip the Saturn, because neither of us had that in its heyday.
I'm not sure many people did.
No, but there are pieces of the Saturn that will show up into the Dreamcast here that I'm going to talk about today. So the Dreamcast came out $99.99, and I remember being in college, and one of my roommates had came back from like a weekend and had it. And he had a couple games with it. He had Ready to Rumble Boxing. He had NFL 2K, which we're going to talk about. And I think that may have been it. Maybe Sonic. And so this was Sega's last hardware iteration here. This was their last gasp. The Saturn, they had burned a lot of bridges because of an early – they kind of sprung it on retailers. You'll never see this again, where they demoed it at E3, and then they said, and you can go to Toys R Us and get this now. And it surprised a lot of people, ones that had stores that were shut out. Yeah, stores that were shut out of it that had regularly sold Sega, they were mad. So it really hurt their reputation in North America. And so the Dreamcast, they started working on that, and it came out in Japan in 98. And so it did okay there, not great. And they really tooled up for one big final push in the United States. And I thought they did a great job with it, and there were a lot of things that they were up against that we're going to talk about and kind of led to its downfall. But $99.99 was a big deal. They got a ton of pre-orders in. And they had what I still will defend. We talked about those hills we'll die on. I still defend as the best release ever in video games when it came to libraries. So they came out of the gun. They came out of the gate with some of the games I'm going to talk about in my top four.
Oh, we're talking launch titles.
Okay. Yeah, launch titles here. Yep. Right out of the gate here with some of the best games on the system and some of the best games ever, to be honest with you. And so one of the things that the hardware really had an advantage of was, and I'm going to talk about this a little bit more later on, is that it was it used Sega's arcade board. And in addition to that, they used a Microsoft operating system, which proved to be very easy for hackers and pirators, as it would be, to be able to crack the system, to be able, which I think led to a little bit to its downfall too. But yeah. And you alluded to this earlier, so really there's only 2 years of software from September 99 to the fall of 2001. There was one lone release in the winter of 2002, which was NHL 2K2, the last game but they had actually discontinued the system after only 18 months, which is wild when you see some of the games that came out the rest of 2001 where the system was already like done. They did what they had to do for a bunch of different reasons. Jordan, before we get into those, let me talk about what were your thoughts on even your first impressions of the system and maybe even the controller?
The controller, I think, is maybe one of the first things. We talked last episode about the N64 and how that controller just visually is jarring almost. Where the Dreamcast one, I think the controller is something you go to right away, but I wouldn't call it jarring. I think it's more interesting. It had the little screen right in the middle.
Yep, the menu you could plug in.
Yeah, it was almost like they fixed what was wrong with the N64 remote. You know, they got rid of, you know, some excessive buttons, but it was still big, that was my first thing when I did see the system, was that remote and going to it. But it played well. You know, it wasn't we talked with the N64 how some games kind of suffered because of the wonkiness. I never felt that with my Dreamcast. But in terms of impressions of it, one thing I think might be why I hold Dreamcast dear to me is I was the only one I knew who had it. It was kind of like, you know, we talked before we went on the air about how certain systems are like, that one's mine. So for me, Dreamcast was mine because none of my buddies had a Dreamcast. And, you know, as a kid, that might be a deterrent, you know, when you're 10, because you can't trade games and borrow with other people. But as an adult, it's kind of like, this one's mine. This is the one I love. This is my game. You know, I remember I had to fight with my dad about putting it in my room because he actually wanted to play a couple games, and I had to put it up on our main TV and stuff like that. But, yeah, all the stuff like the 9999 and stuff that's kind of faded until you reminded me of it. But that really wasn't why I got a Dreamcast. It was more of a spur-of-the-moment purchase for me.
Okay. Yeah, we had a lot of experience with it. So my one roommate had brought it back. So we were playing it, like, right away in the fall of 99. And then
different for me.
Yeah, and then I had friends at home that had it. And then I got mine. I remember because it was – this is a fun memory. It was the first eBay purchase I ever made in, like, the summer of 2000 where, like, I had to go to the post office to get, like, a money order to be able to, like, mail it back then because PayPal wasn't around or I was only 20, so didn't have what needed for it anyway. So I had to send them a money order, a postal money order to pay for it. Because it was a good deal at that point. And you talked earlier about the system kind of going down in price. And I think it may have released at $199, but they had to, they were trying to get a foothold into, obviously with Nintendo 64 going on and PlayStation, and they were trying to get a foothold in. So they were dropping this price like crazy. They had even like, there was even a cash rebate near the end I remember seeing. And, you know, you could get it down to like $100, and they were really just trying to get into the market. And then, of course, once they discontinued it after 18 months, they had other software, they really could cut they were selling it already at a loss because they were trying to get a pretty high attachment rate, which would be like the number of games that people would buy for it.
Sure.
And they did really well out of the gate with it, but the looming issue for the Dreamcast was PlayStation 2. Now I always thought that, it must have been like piracy, right? Because you could download a boot disc, put it in, and then you could put in a copy of a game, and people figured this out fairly quickly because it was a Microsoft operating system. I mean, I have a CDR for the Dreamcast. It's a Super Nintendo emulator with all the games because it's all it needs to do is be able to execute an executable file, and it could do that. So it had like a really hackable operating system, which has been cool for like homebrewers and stuff over the year, and people still developing games for it because it was a powerful system with the arcade board it had in it and being 128 bits for the most part. But the PlayStation 2 looming was a big issue, and you know, once the holiday season 2000 came around, I don't know if you remember, the PS2 had a pretty big shortage because of a manufacturing issue.
Yep.
And so that was like the Dreamcast's last gasp. I mean, they had, if you look at the releases from the fall of 99 through, I mean, they were nonstop. There were no, on, we talked about a Nintendo 64 episode about how they only had like two games out, and then it was really kind of like dry for a while. I mean, Sega just hammered out releases for this system, and they pushed it through. And then when the holiday of 2000 came around, they had some goals on the number of consoles they wanted sold to be able to feel like they could survive to keep going, because they were in debt too, Sega, and they just didn't have the they didn't sell enough for them. And when the PlayStation 2, when it was delayed, yeah, obviously the thinking there was that, well, people will buy Dreamcast, and they didn't. They just waited for PS2. And so at that point, they had to shut it down, and Sega moved into software, which we'll talk about when we wrap up their system here. So unfortunately, it was just 2 short years of games. And this is really going to be one of the last systems that we talk about, really the last that had one of these short windows. We're going to move into gaming generation soon as part of our series that lasted considerably longer than what we've had so far.
Yes.
There's maybe one more. I'd say like the GameCube was like relatively shorter, like 3, 4 years. I gotta look at the dates for that one, I think. But
Yeah, kind of like an in between.
yeah, it was like 01 to 05. I don't know. And so, 06 maybe, but this was really the last short one. And you know, they came out of the gate guns blazing with $9.99 and the different release titles. And they had, and one of the neat things about this game too was this is one of the more creative times in gaming. You saw a little bit of this with the Wii, but this is one of the last times where like you wonder, like, how did this game actually get made? Like, how did the game like Typing of the
Yes.
Dead get made and released in North America? And they were super creative and had all this fun, quirky stuff that played really well. It had
Surely you
great
can't
sports
be
games.
talking about Seaman.
I can be talking about Seaman. I'm glad we're enunciating appropriately here.
M-A-N.
And it's funny about Seaman is that I read this the other day when I was reading some articles on this, is that you know, the Dreamcast was slow out of the gate in Japan, which is a little bit of a surprise, Sega being a, you know, having a
Yeah.
Japanese thing. And Seaman is actually what the game that turned the system around there and gave it a longer shelf
Really?
life and sold really well. So they're in the, you know, it's quirky stuff, and it sold surprisingly well. So let me talk a little bit about $9.99. You've been leading up to this, like, why was this launch so good? So these are some of the games they put out on this date. They put out Power Stone, Ready to Rumble Boxing, which was really like a, it's kind of like a spiritual successor to Punch Out. It was like
Yeah, very
3D
fun.
punching, had real quirky characters, like real easy to pick up on. Sonic Adventure. So here's your Sonic game. No Sonic game came out during the Saturn's run, but Sonic Adventure came out at launch. Soul Calibur, which was a game I'm going to talk about in a little bit as a big
And
spoiler.
still kind of a game that has iterations, you know?
Yeah. And
So.
then you had your typical, like, again, so we talked about this being an arcade board used by a bunch of people, but then you had your typical third party stuff. Like, there was a Mortal Kombat game, Hydro Thunder was a Midway game, arcade game, NFL Blitz 2000. These games were arcade perfect at home. This is, and Soul Calibur was an example of a game that was better than the arcade on the Dreamcast. Not only did they add more stuff, it was even more polished. So they were able to take this, because again, this board is the same thing that was in the arcades. They were able to make it even better in some cases for the home library. And then there's some other stuff, and I wouldn't say it's shovelware, but you know, maybe checker flag's your thing, or I'm sorry, cart flag the flag, and some other things. The House of the Dead 2 was another one I wanted to talk about. So that's a really strong launch lineup with some of the best games on the system right out of the gate. And you know, and people had to buy an extra controller, because again, we talked about on the N64 with the how many controller spots. Dreamcast also had 4 right out of the gate. Sony never did that, right? Dreamcast had 4 also, and they had those VMUs, which was your memory card with the little screen.
Sony still does not do
No,
that.
exactly. And they had a rumble pack you could put in too to the system, as the controller was built in and ready to go, had a lot of different things you could expand onto it. So that was the system. And now we're going to get into the games, and we'll talk a little bit more about it. So Jordan, why don't you go ahead and give us your number 4?
Yeah, sure. By the way, I do defer to you on the history of systems. I like sitting back and listening to you kind of hit us with the dates and the facts, where I'm just here like, wasn't this cool game, you know, fun?
So this is one I remember vividly. So
at you on that one. But it's cool because I'm sure other listeners are like me, where you hit that 9999, and that's a date that I remember, but you know, I'd forgotten. And then you hit it. I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that now. You know, it's kind of cool just to relive some of that stuff. Sure. And talk about the price just a little bit and stuff. I think one thing that helped me with the Dreamcast was the price drop almost mm-hmm. instantly, because I remember I held off on PlayStation 2 for a long time because of their price. Oh, and yeah. That's kind of why I was an adopter to Dreamcast. But anyways, let's go into the games. So something you mentioned was, you know, how they had the ability to really just bring arcade games right to the system perfectly, which is every previous system we talked about tried it but failed. You know, they could give us the arcade ports, but the arcade versions were always better. And with Dreamcast, that kind of changed, and I wonder if that coincides with the death of the arcade, you know, once we were able to make arcade games in our living room, you know, but that's another topic in itself. But my number four is a game that I remember playing in the arcade, but I had it for my Dreamcast, and I played it a whole lot more. And it is a driving game, which is something I've never been a fan of. I've never been, like, a driving fan. If there's any Gran Turismo fans out there, we apologize. for not giving it the love on PlayStation 1, and we apologize in advance for our PlayStation 2 episode.
Our anti-simulation driving bias that we have. Yeah.
But what made this game fun that I haven't mentioned yet is simulation is probably not the word that I would use, because my number four is a game called Crazy Taxi.
As my number four also.
Oh, awesome. Okay. Yeah. If you don't like driving games, give Crazy Taxi a try, because it's not simulation at all. It's not realistic in any sense. It's goofy, it's fun, it's over the top, it's wild. Crazy Taxi is basically, you know, a score, kind of a score accumulation type video game, where you are a taxi driver, you pick people up, you drive them all over the place, but you want to do stunts while you do it, you do barrel rolls and flips and all kinds of stuff.
You're fighting an aggressive clock, I would say too, right? That thing is
very
tough.
Aggressive. Yeah, and I mean, this game spawned quite a few sequels. I mean, there's five or six Crazy Taxi games, but the first one I had was for, and I think Crazy Taxi 2 was on Dreamcast as well, correct?
It was. Crazy Taxi 2 was on Dreamcast, but it was one of those 2001 games when the system was kind of dead already.
Yeah, this is the only one I had. But again, it's interesting that we talked about the arcade thing, and we go right into our number four being a game taken right out of the arcade. And I remember playing this in the arcade, and I was like, well, I like the Dreamcast version better, you know, which is exactly everything that you said.
That's why I had it as my number four, actually. I think it's just a great segue into talking just this power to be able to bring this home. And everybody used it too. You know, I don't have the Capcom fighting games on my list, but they brought like Marvel vs. Capcom. They brought that arcade perfect, right? Because the Capcom used the Naomi board too. They brought all that stuff right to the Dreamcast. Just like Crazy Taxi, and they were arcade perfect, you know, to your point on why this was so appealing. And it actually definitely defined, that's why I wanted it to be on my list, because it really does define the system for me. It's just wild, over-the-top arcade game that plays perfect at home.
Yeah, very smoothly. You know, my big hang-up on driving games a lot is it's hard to make. Honestly, probably Mario Kart's the only driving game I've ever given any real attention to outside of this one. And the biggest thing for me is usually how the driving actually handles, whereas with Crazy Taxi, that was never an issue. I mean, sometimes if you got off course, it's because you tried to do a jump or a drift. It's your own fault, you know, whereas so many other
bonuses.
Driving games.
I mean, you were chasing high scores, too, which I noticed as consoles went on, I kind of moved more to being an arcade player, too. Maybe because, like, the shorter amounts of time to play. So it's like you could sit down with Crazy Taxi for 20 minutes and probably play, like, what, like, 8 games? You know what I mean? Like, it's like 2-minute clock, and, like, you try to keep going. But so as your windows into gaming get smaller, you're like, oh, I like arcade. Oh, I want to chase my high score. You find different goals to keep yourself engaged on something like that. So.
And what's cool about this game, too, is, like I mentioned earlier, you know, Dreamcast was my system. I didn't know anyone else who had one. So this is a game you could play by yourself quite easily. But if a buddy came over, is like, oh, you got a Dreamcast, and he's never played it, he could pick up Crazy Taxi and pick it up like that.
Yeah, sure. It had the arcade easy controls, and you just pass the controller.
Yep. And the fact that it was my game didn't really make me worlds better at it than somebody else. You know, so if you have a little competition, it's not something where I'm just going to crush you because I own it.
Right.
You know, chances are I'm going to win because maybe I know the turns a little bit better and things like that. But it's a real easy pick up and go game that I enjoyed a lot.
Yeah, that's a great choice. Obviously, it's mine too. This one came out. It's funny. My memory was like that it was an early game on the system, but it actually was more like spring 2000.
Okay.
And then I remember playing it. God, it must have been like, it must have been around that time. Yeah, it must have been right when it came out. I remember having it must have been right around when it came out then in like the spring of 2000.
And I want to say, I mentioned that I bought it as a bundle at Sam's Club. I want to say that this game is the one that came with it. Okay. I don't remember that specifically, but in my brain, that's kind of what it was. Sure. So I'll just say that it was.
Yeah. Yeah, and they've this one, you can still play it on a myriad of systems today. There was a Dreamcast collection for the 360 that it was physically on disc there. Played exactly the same as it did on the Dreamcast, you know, before. And then you can, I'm not sure if it's on the PS4 levels. I don't know if they ever made that available or not. But I know on PS3 and stuff, you could get them 360. You could get it, like I said. I never played the second one. I have it. It was one that I wanted to make sure I had because I enjoyed the first one so much, but I don't think I've ever tuned into it. And there was a third. I don't think there were any more than after that. But we'll correct ourselves and see. But there was a third for the Xbox.
I brought up the wiki. Yeah, I brought up the wiki for Crazy Taxi. Yeah. There's like iOS versions, like mobile versions.
Oh, yeah. Sure. I mean, that would be a fun game. Again, it's pick up and play. It's arcade. And the third game was for the Xbox. Sega produced for it, which we'll talk a little bit about later when we wrap the system up. So, and the history of Sega.
And just to speak to what we're talking about with where Dreamcast got the arcade ports like perfectly. I'm looking at the game Crazy Taxi. It was released for Dreamcast, PlayStation 2, GameCube actually had Crazy Taxi, and of course PC.
Yeah.
And the game reviews for the four systems. Here's what they got. PC got a 56%. GameCube got a 70, PS2 got a 79, and Dreamcast got a 90%.
Yeah.
So Dreamcast did it best.
Yeah, and I think that the PS2 one, I'm curious, what was the release date on that one? That could have impacted the score, because it certainly wasn't fresh.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, so they, and I remember the GameCube, that's good that you brought that up, because they, again, Sega, which is I think a talking point we brought up before, does a nice job of, it certainly was, because of their different collections they have, they do a good job of pushing their software around. And so when they decided to make a change from no longer being in hardware, they made sure their games were on different systems so they could, you know, stay afloat and whatnot. So then you started to see some of these unique titles at the time that were just a Dreamcast. And that's really kind of one thing that we're going to be looking at going forward too in this series is going to be that a lot of multi-platform now. So far we've been able to escape some of that, although we've talked about some. But now we're getting into it where it's like, well, do I want to talk about this game on the PS2 or the Xbox or whatever?
Sure.
And so things start to dilute themselves as it is in the current climate today. All right, so what was your number three then?
So my number three is about as opposite as you can get from what we just talked about in terms of Crazy Taxi. You know, you said the appeal is maybe sitting down for 10 minutes and playing 8 rounds. My number three, I went with kind of an epic tale. And this is, I will say, when I think of Dreamcast, this is the first game that comes to mind is a Dreamcast game. But it's not my number one for a couple reasons. And I went with a game called Shenmue. I'm sure you've heard of it. Have you played it?
Yeah, I have played it. Okay. I knew you were going to put it on your list.
Okay.
So it's not on mine. I have not played a lot myself. My cousin actually really played a lot of it. The Dreamcast kind of, like, if you saw it, and since it was so inexpensive to jump in on, a lot of like family members and friends that got one even later on, especially when you could, you know, kind of pirate the games and whatnot when the system was already long dead. So this is the story of this game and how much it costs and how vast it is mind blowing today to think about. They did this in 2001, and now nowadays, you know, AAA games cost hundreds of millions of dollars, and this one was like 90 million?
It was the most expensive game ever made.
Yeah, it took forever to make, rightfully so, to build like this world that was so interactive. It was so ahead of its time, but man, it was certainly part of like what bankrupted them, I like to think. I mean, they were in so much from this too.
I mean, it sold well, but I don't think it ever even recovered the cost of production. So, you know. But here's the deal about Shenmue. It's we're entering kind of now with the systems, with Dreamcast and especially with PS2, kind of the sandbox type game, the open world environments, where you don't have to just go from point A to point B. You can explore and find side quests and do other things. And I think this is one of the first games like this, not the first, but it's one of the first ones like this on a big scale. Shenmue's a story of a guy named Ryu or Ryu. I never really know how to pronounce that.
I think it's Ryu, like the Street Fighter guy.
Yeah, and it's just a revenge story. You know, he's trying to take down, you know, the evil gang. It's set in the 80s in Japan. One of the cool things that they did that has been replicated in further games is you can go to the arcade and play arcade games. So it's like
Sega
games
arcade
within games.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's games like that. It's my number three and not my number one for a few reasons. One, it felt like it took forever. Nowadays, if I spend, you know, hours and hours and hours on a game, it seems normal. At the time, it was like, man, is this game ever going to end?
It was three discs, right?
Yeah, it was a lot.
And this is three Dreamcast discs, not PlayStation. These GD-ROMs could hold substantially more. Substantially, but I mean, it's not a DVD-ROM, but it could hold more than like what a PlayStation for like Final Fantasy VII that we talked about before.
Right. Another issue I have, and it's funny, I'm citing the issues when it's my number three game, but is I think the voice acting left quite a bit to be desired. It's very like wooden and kind of like video gamey, I guess.
Sure.
But this is my biggest gripe with the game. Now, listen, Shenmue's a really cool game. It's ambitious. It's a really ambitious game. I think it's the best descriptive of it. Yeah, I mean, it's this big open world. It's this giant thing. It's about Ryu trying to get revenge. You know, he wants to come get back against. I wish I knew could remember the name of the gang. And so here's what sucks the most about this game, right? So the end of the game, Ryu figures out Master Chen is in this harbor. He goes to find Chen. There's a little battle and all this stuff. And then he gets on a boat to go to Hong Kong to find the next guy. And the game ends. And I've never been more furious with a game ending before because it's a game that literally ends by basically saying, you better play Shenmue 2 when it comes out.
Right.
And I was so pissed off.
But we had to stop development, so this is the end of this game.
Yeah, the game ends basically in the middle of the story. And I was so angry for spending so many hours to get to, there's going to be another. Yeah. Gosh, which nowadays maybe, I don't know, I can't think of any modern games where that happens. I don't know that it does, but gosh, I was so mad. I remember being like legitimately angry that was the end of the game.
Isn't the end of the game too like a 40-minute sequence that
it's really long?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like they were just kind of showing off what they could
do. There's a lot of talking too. If you're a reader, this may not be for. Unless you're a reader, this may not be for you. A lot of dialogue, if I remember.
Yeah. Having said all that, I listed it because it is a good game, and it is a memorable game, and it is a defining game of the Dreamcast. I mean, this is a game they went all in on. They spent everything on this game, and you can see that. Visually, it's really good. The fighting sequences are pretty cool. It's a little arcadey and a little like combo-ish. But also kind of timing, things like that. It's kind of cool. There's exploration. There's side stuff. There's, you know, if you're just getting bored with the game, you can just play some Outrun and some
stuff like that.
I mean, it is a good game, but it's got its flaws. And that's why I couldn't put it any higher than my number.
That's a great pick and certainly one that defines the system. So did you ever play Shenmue 2?
No, and that's what makes it worse. I didn't even get the second one.
Well, the second one never came out in the U.S. They released it in Japan for the Dreamcast. I want to say Europe, too, for the Dreamcast, but I'm going to have to check that. But it never came out in the U.S., and then they released it for the original Xbox.
Yep.
You can get Shenmue 2 there, and I remember it came bundled with like a movie they made. But I think the movie's like CGI type movie from that around that time that they made for it. But good news, Jordan, with the impending, and I'm not sure the date, of Shenmue 3, I guess people that when 2 ended, you know, the story was still going on. And you think about all the money they spent, I'm not surprised they split it into two games then. Is the upcoming Shenmue 1 and 2 HD, is that correct?
Yep, for PS4, Xbox One, and PC as well.
Yeah, so you will get your chance to muddle through a very long game, and get a chance to get. But you know, to be honest, I probably would check that out if there's a physical version of it.
I think I'm going to. Yeah.
I do have mine still, the original US for the Dreamcast one, but I never put a lot of time into it. Certainly ambitious, like you said. That's a great choice.
It's funny. I want to read a quote from the Shenmue Wikipedia article. Hang on. Not that we're into reading from Wikipedia, but it gives the plot of part one, part two, and then there's a Shenmue 3, and this is all it says. Ryu and Shenhua, I don't know if I'm saying that right, embark on a new journey which reveals their shared destinies. Lan Di returns with a new antagonist, blah, blah, blah. The game will not conclude the Shenmue story, as Suzuki hopes to create further games in the series. So it says
Suzuki's
right there.
Suzuki's a grifter. He's getting a lot of money out of it. You know, the story of Shenmue 3 is interesting, right? So they did a Kickstarter for it, but it was already backed by Sony. Because at the time, I think that 3 is just going to be Sony. And so they were kind of taking the temperature of like what kind of interest there was in it. Because the money it raised, you were like, there's no way they can make a AAA title with that money. But it was like Sony was dumping in like $50 million too or whatever for it. And it'll take forever because I don't think he's done much with it. So it's good to know he's straggling people along here with another game. We'll see. Yeah. We'll see what happens there.
He openly says this won't be the ending either.
I'm curious in that Wikipedia if they have anything around the development. I've read about it before, but it was quite long and an interesting story. But they made it, so there you go. Nowadays, that thing would have been canceled way in. There's no way they would have kept throwing money at it. So, times have changed.
They just announced last month it's delayed until next year. So 2019 is when they're saying.
Okay. Yeah.
We'll see.
We'll see on that one. All right. Well, my number three is a game that I name dropped earlier, and that's Soul Calibur. No, not Seaman. I did have some experience with Seaman.
Didn't we all, Brad?
Yes. So why don't we talk about Seaman before I talk about Soul Calibur?
Sure.
Why don't you share your memories of this and Leonard Nimoy voicing
That's my first memory there. Basically, if you're listening, you don't know what Seaman is. It's a fish with a human face.
Yes.
And it's basically a Tamagotchi, you know? I mean,
that's funny. Yeah, that's a callback too.
Yeah, I mean, you just have this pet fish and you interact with it, and
it used the Dreamcast microphone, right? Is that right?
Yeah,
it came with the mic. It came bundled with the microphone. I didn't mention that accessory. I never had that. So essentially, you could raise your own Spock fish that would mock you and do other fun stuff and whatever. But I don't even know if you could beat it. The game, not the fish. Any other memories of that one? But people should YouTube it and then wonder
are
like
two things that kind of go
right
hand in hand. So.
Hand in hand. And so yes.
Back
to Soul
Calibur. All right.
Yeah, and back to Soul Calibur. So Soul Calibur was a release game on the Dreamcast. This is a fighting game, 3D fighting game where you can move even more 3D than you could in, like, Virtual Fighter and stuff. And this was a Namco game. And Namco also used that Naomi board we've been talking about. Another big arcade company. I like Namco arcade games. You've probably played them. And so this game, there was an original game. It was called Soul Edge, I think. Yeah, Soul Edge on the PlayStation. But it was kind of hindered by the PlayStation. But Soul Calibur came out in the arcades. And they brought it to the Dreamcast right at launch. And this is one of the most, this is one of the highest reviewed games ever. Not just for the Dreamcast. I mean, it certainly falls within top 100 lists of all time. And this is, again, a launch game for the system. I, from a fighting game standpoint, I would probably say it's my favorite. Again, an arcade 3D fighter with weapons. They've made numerous games after it. I remember beating it with a number of different characters, so as an average gamer, it always feels good to be accomplished where you could actually make it through and you just, you know, swing that sword and knock that guy off and I beat the game, right? So, and there were different unlockables in it too, if I remember correctly. But Soul Calibur was, certainly one of my favorite games and absolutely defines the system for me because it was so mind blowing in 1999 to see this at home. I mean, it won a ton of awards. I mean, this stuff was so far ahead of what was out there for PlayStation and Nintendo 64 at the time. It was just, it was unbelievable. Did you ever play Soul Calibur?
I never owned it, but I have played it. And something you mentioned is kind of like what I always went to when I thought of Soul Calibur. It's Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter type games, but with weapons. You know, you had katanas, battle axes, swords and shields, depending on which character you used, you know.
Yep.
But yeah, it's a really good game. I didn't know that it was so well received, or that it won so many awards. But
yeah, I think if you look up even its ratings, I think it got like a 98 on Metacritic now from like going back and gathering everything. It's pretty crazy.
At all, you know, especially when you compare it to what was out at the time. We kind of briefly touched over fighting games and things like that in previous episodes, and just visually. To compare the two games right away. Now, visual presentation is not be all end all for a good game for me.
Nope.
I don't really care what a game looks like so much, but sometimes when a game just looks a lot better, it makes you want to sit down and try it, you know?
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, and this is a game that, I mean, has spawned, how many sequels has Soul Calibur had?
Five, right? I think Soul Calibur 5 is the last one that came out.
Yeah. I'm not sure.
For the PS3, I don't know if I have that. We'll check on that. But yeah, so yeah, I think sure. I know there were five. I don't know if they made another one since then. But yeah, Namco, great company on the Dreamcast and bringing these games home. And so yeah, a lot of fond memories of that one for me, certainly. Yeah. And so when I talk about that launch lineup, I mean, this is the cherry on top. Yeah, it's mm-hmm. one of the best games ever. So
yeah, if you're interested in playing a Dreamcast or looking up what games to play, like there's a really cool article I found. There's just they rated the top 25 games of the Dreamcast, which is kind of an easy thing to find for any system. Just type in top games and you'll find. I mean, of course, it's opinion, but Soul Calibur was in I think number two or number three on there.
Yeah.
Which is not a surprise, but in a way, it is a surprise because. Sometimes fighting games don't get listed as the best game of a system.
Right.
You know, it might be the best game for its genre, but to be the best game on a system, it's got to be pretty perfect as a fighting game.
Yeah, real impressive. That's a great point. That's a great. Yeah. And that's where it kind of transcended things because it was outside the fighting. And like I said, you know, there was a lot of 2D fighters on there because they brought home everything from the arcade, Street Fighter III, Marvel vs. Capcom, which you talked about. They came to the Dreamcast 2 later on. Actually, Marvel vs. Capcom was only like a month or two after release. Capcom vs. SNK came down to it. There are quite a few. Like I said, in those 2 years, they brought a lot of fighting games back, a lot of popular ones from the arcade. But Soul Calibur sticks out to me.
Yeah, I actually thought you were going to have Marvel vs. Capcom ranked on your list.
Yeah, but, it's tough. The game is the definitive version is on the Dreamcast. Well, actually, the only version of the Dreamcast. I'm confusing Marvel Super Heroes. and Marvel vs. Capcom 2 was that made its way to other systems as the Dreamcast kind of fell off. It made its way to PS2, and in particular, and so and you could find it online and different things like that. So it didn't make my list as a defining game for the system, although it certainly fell in that category of arcade. Ports that came home that were near perfect. So
yeah, and that's one that I think of when I think of Dreamcast. But I never owned that one, so it didn't make my list. The Marvel vs. Capcom. And I think part of it is because, again, to go back to the fact that I was the only guy I knew who had a Dreamcast. Fighting games aren't as good when you're only play the computer. They're not bad, but they kind of have a shelf life compared to playing with buddies.
Sure,
you know?
Sure. All right, how about your number two then?
So my number two, we are going to stick with some fighting, but we're going to go to professional wrestling again. And I went with a game called Giant Gram 2000. This is one that will probably be hard to track down if you're looking for games. It's All Japan Pro Wrestling's Dreamcast game. And we spent half of our N64 episode just singing the praises of the wrestling engine from THQ and how it was perfected as wrestling games and watching with friends and playing with friends and all that stuff. This does not compare to those games at all. But what's cool about it is it's very much its own game because I would consider this more along the lines of a Mortal Kombat, of a Street Fighter in terms of an arcade-style fighting rather than an actual wrestling game. You know, even today with WWE 2K games, they try to make them wrestling games, whereas this game was more of a just a fighting game that just happened to be professional wrestlers. Did you ever play this game at all?
I did not. I have not played it. I do not have it. It's kind of been on my list to to pick up and procure, but I have not.
So there's a couple really cool things about it. Like I said, the fighting part of it just makes it a little unique in terms of wrestling games, in the sense that it's not necessarily about, you know, doing the moves. It's there's combos, you know, like a fighting game. Like if you're playing Mortal Kombat or Soul Calibur, to do something, you got to do a five-button combo, which might be a turnoff for guys like you and me. But, you know, but what I thought was really cool about it as I was thinking back on it was, one, the roster was very unique. You had your All Japan roster at the time, which is Misawa, Kawada, Kobashi, Jun Akiyama, guys like that. And even the Americans, I think Vader was on there, because Vader had left WWE at this point, was on that renaissance in All Japan. But the legends on there, listen to some of these guys that were on this game. Yeah. I don't think they've ever been on another video game before. Baba was on there. Fritz Von Erich.
Wow. Did he get royalties?
Yeah, right. Bruno Sammartino was on this game, which before he was on ever on any WWF games or WWE games.
Wow.
You want to go real old school? They had Don Leo Jonathan and Ricky Dozen were on the game.
Wow, so, Ricky Dozen. Back to the OG.
Yeah, they
OG,
went all the way back. Yeah.
They appeared all the in All Japan, in any iteration of All Japan Pro Wrestling. They got included here.
Basically, yeah. So that was pretty cool. Like, you know, it's a very unique roster. You know, you have, I'm sure it's a very, very, very small subset of guys who are saying, I want to play a wrestling video game, but I want to be Don Leo Jonathan. You know, if that's you, Giant Grand 2000 is probably your only option. But what really was cool about this game that I don't think I've ever seen replicated, or at least replicated in this way, was they had a thing called Historic Mode. And what I loved about this was it would give you a classic All Japan match.
Yeah.
And you'd play it. And at certain points in the match, you had to do the moves that were done in the actual real-life match. So to give you an example, one of the ones in there, I looked it up, was Giant Baba versus Stan Hansen from 1982. So you play as Baba, right? And 10 seconds in the match, you got to hit a stomach kick. And so you do it. And it gives you points for doing it right. And if you do it right, and if you accumulate enough points, one, you unlock some things like create a wrestler uniforms and things like that, and gear and stuff like that. But you also unlock clips from the actual match itself, wow, which blew me away at the time. You know, I'm doing this stuff, and then all of a sudden I'm watching highlights from this match in pretty good video quality, especially for a 1982 match. And I was like, holy crap, this is insane. I've never seen anything like this. And I still really haven't seen anything like that. Now, WWE kind of did that a few years ago with some of their Steve Austin stuff, where you would recreate Steve Austin's greatest matches, but you only had to get the finish right. This, it's like, make sure you do that body slam and elbow smash combo. It's really cool.
Yeah.
And now imagine how hard this was for me, because this game's in Japanese.
Yeah.
So, like, I would have to pause it when something came up, go to my game facts that I had printed off sitting next to me, and be like, okay, I've got to do – okay, a hammer throw with a clothesline right now. Unpause it and do it within 3 seconds. So it made for some frustrating times, but it was very rewarding, very, very cool, and it's got a lot of classic All Japan matches. It's got Misawa beating Jumbo for the very first time in 1990. It's got Kawada versus Misawa with the famous Gonzo Bomb where Misawa gets dropped in his head. A lot of cool stuff. This isn't a wrestling podcast, but and then another cool thing is, so you get this list of like 10 or 12 historic matches, and you fight as one guy, like you're fighting as Baba. Then you go to the second match. Now you fight as the other guy. Same match, but now you're Hansen, and you got to do Hansen spots from the match. Just a really awesome concept that I don't know why more wrestling games never did this, especially WWE with their library.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, you saw that in some of the 2K series at the end of the last generation. I don't know if they still did it, but, like, I remember the one where you went through, like, all the different WrestleManias or the Attitude Era, and you had to do certain things in the match to get to unlock the next one or to unlock, you know, different wrestlers or whatever.
Yeah,
it wasn't mandatory, but, like, if you wanted to unlock the people, which is why you were doing it, you had to actually do those things in order, and when it would, you know, obviously it would cue you to it.
Yeah, and especially now the tech's there, I mean, you could probably unlock the entire match itself to view, you know? Whereas with this, it's kind of like a highlight.
2000.
Like a, yeah.
So. Now, were there any sequels for it? I'm having a
there was
time pulling it
up. A few Giant Grams. I think this was technically the third game in the series.
Yeah, Giant Gram 3.
The third Giant Gram, but it was called Giant Gram 2000. I also had a New Japan game that didn't rank because it just was not nearly as good as this one. But yeah, there's other Giant Gram games, but I don't know that there was ever any others for the Dreamcast. I'm not sure what system they would be for.
I think 2 and 3 came out for the Dreamcast, but there's not a lot of information out in our normal
avenues on them.
Now, real quick, as a sidebar for wrestling, if you don't mind. So some of the other offerings for wrestling were, we talked before about Acclaim and their WWF Attitude Series, which it makes sense that it would come out on Dreamcast because it came out in the summer of 99. And so, it came out, it was around that time. And so, those games came over and we lamented those with all the different combos and having the pause and stuff. So all those games, like the ECW ones, they came out for the Dreamcast too. And they were probably the best on the Dreamcast because the Dreamcast is better than the PlayStation, obviously. And then there was one arcade game, WWF game. Do you remember this game for the Dreamcast? It's called WWF Royal Rumble. And it was an arcade WWF game that they brought home that didn't have a lot of moves, but it had, like, I remember, like, Kurt Angle being in it, which is a big deal. And it was an arcade Royal Rumble game. There wasn't an incredible amount to it, but it was the one unique Dreamcast wrestling game that they have not done anywhere else. It didn't review very well, ultimately, but I remember playing it a little bit at the time.
Yeah, I Google it while you're talking, and I see a couple images, and it just makes me want to praise Giant Gram more because the graphics were so good for the time. Like, it was
they weren't great, and then of course too is, you know, as we talked about last time, we were playing wrestling games on the Nintendo 64, so and the Royal Rumble was super arcadey, but it wasn't keeping our interest.
No, not at all. So yeah, I figured that would be on my list and not yours, but I kind of spoiled that to you privately that I was going
to
sing the praises.
No, that's a good one to make out there. Hey, if you've played that game, we'd like to hear from you. I'd like to hear more of the stories. That's really good.
Yeah, and it's tough to find a lot of info on this game. So, because it's an All Japan game and probably not an American release. I don't even know if I needed to have it modified or anything, if it just threw in and played it.
Yeah, you know, interesting. So you could do a couple things with it. You didn't have to mod chip the Dreamcast because you could use a boot disk and it would boot up Japanese games or your games from Europe or whatever. You could bypass the global whatever indicator for where it had to be. The word slipped in my mind, but
yeah, I know what you're
saying. Yeah, so the region you could bypass that with it, and I think you could with the boot disk too. Which I still have mine, actually. So my number two is, I would say this is one of my favorite sports games of all time. It's one that I played, I played it so much that we actually broke a button on the Dreamcast controller. And you could tell, like, right away, because you're like, oh man, the A button on this controller stinks. Like, I don't want to use it. It's not giving me, like, it's registering, like, my pushing, but it's not going in. Because that's what you use to swing a racket. And so my number two is Virtual Tennis.
Oh, okay. That's on my honorable mentions. Cool.
Yeah, this was so arcade tennis time with real tennis players so they could get the licenses. And you could play – actually, they had the licenses for the events like the Australian Open and stuff. I think in that version they did. I don't know if they were made up. But so those were fine. You could play singles. You could play doubles. You could play doubles on the same team. The engine was amazing, incredible graphics for the time, but it also had like a global mode where you would go through and unlock things and you would play these mini games. And essentially they were tennis mini games. They were, you know, knock over all these bottles within a certain amount of time. And so I played so much of this game and even just the mini games could have been their own game on their own. You know, I haven't played a lot of virtual tennis since then. I know that some of the later ones kind of brought some of that stuff out, but it was so unique at the time. I played so much of that game. And we played against each other, too. It was pretty competitive, and the game was hard, too. I remember, I don't think I ever beat it, but it was really cool to have all these kind of arcade mini games that involved just, I mean, we talked about Pong before, but it was kind of stuff like that. You know, you're slicing, you're doing whatever you can to hit these things or, you know, cause something to break and then something else to fall and that kind of breaking boxes, I remember, you know, and you had to do it like as fast as you could to unlock like different probably clothing pieces and things like that. So it was on your honorable mention list, though, huh?
It was. It was. And it's funny because I didn't think we'd talk about it, but it's cool to hear that somebody else liked it. And it makes me wonder, like, is tennis maybe the most underrated sport that's good for video games? Because, I mean, obviously football and basketball are probably the go-tos with Madden and 2K and stuff like that, and then baseball behind that. But there's been a lot of pretty good tennis games over the years, and tennis isn't something that does not interest me at all in the real world. Like, I don't play tennis. I don't really follow tennis. But I'm a fan of tennis video games.
Yeah.
You know, I found out that they were coming out with a Mario tennis game for the Switch, and I was like, yes, that's a must-buy for me.
There you go.
You know, like, but, yeah, this is one that was on my honorable mentions. I didn't break a button playing it that much, but, you know, everything you said about it was really cool. It wasn't just tennis. It had all the mini-games that made it even more fun. But even the tennis itself was pretty cool with the ranking mode. I think you start at, like, 200 or 300 and you have to work your way up, correct?
Yep.
Yeah, so very good game.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Excellent game.
And they, you know, that system went on for a little bit. There was a second game that came out for Dreamcast, 2K2, one of the last games of the system, but it was also being fabricated out to the different consoles at that time too.
Did you ever play with four people? Because you could do doubles with the four remotes.
Yeah, I don't think we did, but you could definitely.
That was a little chaotic.
That is chaotic. Trying to, a lot of yelling, but that's fun, right? Those are the best memories. I remember playing some pretty spirited games. Of that game, that's for sure. So another one of those ones where, like, I think I picked up the one on the 360, and I played a little bit of it. But this had like this was exactly like the tennis game that I wanted. I didn't want anything more complicated than this. Like a button to lob, but to slice. That's fine. Like Mario Tennis is a pretty good job in this too. But I never got into like the top spin games or anything like that. This really was like, I wanted to play arcade tennis. It was my speed, and that's why it was so defining for me.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good game.
So that leads us to our number ones. What is your number one, sir?
So my number one, I feel like I gave away a little bit a few episodes back when we were talking, I believe, PlayStation. I mentioned the first iteration of a game, and the sequel I said I would talk about later.
Yes.
So let's talk about Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2, which I consider to be the pinnacle of skateboarding video games. I don't know how high of a mountain that is, but this is the peak of that mountain.
This is
so,
the peak.
Yeah, Tony Hawk. We sang the praises of the game series already. The Tony Hawk games and how fun they are and how easy they are to pick up but hard to master, which I think is perfect for a sports video game, especially easy to play, hard to be great at. But Tony Hawk 2, I actually had Tony Hawk 1 and 2 for the Dreamcast. But Tony Hawk 2 was just everything that the first one was, but better. The levels were better. The soundtrack was better. The movement was better. Maybe that was because of the Dreamcast. But it had more multiplayer stuff with tag and kind of like Horse. Do you remember playing Horse on Tony Hawk 2 where you would do a move and then the other guy would have to do the same move? This is all stuff new to Tony Hawk 2, I believe. But yeah, I don't really know what to add that we didn't already talk about in Tony Hawk 1 other than you don't have to have any interest in skateboarding on a real life level to love the Tony Hawk games. It helps. You know, I knew the characters from Tony Hawk 1 already, but that didn't make me like the game more. It didn't make me say, "Oh, I got to be Bucky Lossick." That's my lifelong dream.
I don't care
about that. But this game was just so darn good, and I spent so many hours on it. This is a game that I would play, beat, start over, play, and beat again. I remember like erasing the memory from my memory card so that I could unlock
just
it again.
To unlock everything again. I mean, that's definitely a number one game.
Yeah,
nothing says it more than that. Yeah, I when I was going through my games and looking at this too, because I had some fuzzy memories, I'm like, well, what did I play one on? And I think I played one on the PlayStation, because these games for the Dreamcast were a little interesting, because they came out within like 4 months of each other, which sounds really weird because it would never happen today, but they were kind of catching up on the Dreamcast, so they put one out on it, but I swear I must have played it on the PlayStation first, but I remember playing two on the Dreamcast. And that was the one that I think I put the most hours into. They kind of blend
definitely
a little bit together for me. But I contemplated putting this one on my list, and I kind of was being sneaky with it because I knew you would talk about it again, and I kind of, and because it was multi-platform, I wanted to say I don't know if it necessarily defined the system for me, but defined era, you know. And again, a game that, you know, a sports game that transcends sports, kind of like how Soul Calibur transcends fighting games, and so that certainly would be a game that would define a system. And they actually came out, so Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2X was a game that came out on the Xbox shortly after this, and that is kind of considered like the definitive game. It's like a little bit upgraded from this one, but this is it. You know, it's I think it has, there may, I better not misspeak on that. I don't know if there's online components to it or not. Later on, they did that kind of stuff. And while the Dreamcast had that capability, and I'll talk about it in a little bit, the, I mean, it had so much stuff locked into it. And, man, I spent, I spent so many hours playing this game, too.
And all the levels were good, too. I mean, this was just, there were so many good levels. The Bull Ring, which, you know, the famous, like, Matador fighting arena was one of the levels. Of course, the hangar, you know, gosh, I could talk about all the different levels. I think Philadelphia was on this one. Actually, I probably should have looked that up.
A lot of time in the hangar,
Tony Hawk 2 had Skate Heaven, which I mentioned before. I wasn't a skateboarder, but my brother and all his friends were, so I know skating culture, and I knew all the guys and stuff like that. Skate Heaven was very cool for hardcore skateboarders or skateboarding fans because it had a ramp in there, which is from a pretty famous skateboarding movie called The Search for Animal Chin, which is like a skateboarding movie that was made by skateboarders, by Tony Hawk and other people. And it's just this goofy, dumb movie, but the Animal Chin ramp is in Tony Hawk 2. So skateboarding fans themselves probably really, really love that. So it's cool that it's a game that could reach people who didn't really give a crap about skating, but for hardcore skaters, they probably loved it even more. You know, it didn't alienate anyone. It just included everybody who just liked video games.
So. Great series, and it certainly peaked around this time.
I sure wish I could talk about it more because they keep plugging out these games, but the quality drops off substantially after two for me. I think three and Underground are still okay.
Yeah, they were well received.
Yeah, some different but things. I think this is the peak. I don't think it gets better than two.
Yep. So, and the game holds up too. That's one thing with Dreamcast games that we maybe haven't talked about is, you know, even a game like Virtual Tennis or Soul Calibur, I mean, those games are still great today. They're not marred by ugly polygon graphics or slow gameplay or loading or anything like, I mean, I'm sure there's loading, but like I fired up Tony Hawk 2 before for this show, and it's great. It runs exactly, you know, they came out with Tony Hawk Pro Skater HD for the 360 and the PS3. That's the one you want to get from, like, the last kind of generation. They came out with a game for current gens, which is awful. It reviewed terrible. Yeah. It was broke out of the box. Like, a really bad, sad ending.
I'm so glad I read that in depth before I bought it.
Yeah, a lot of people bought it on impulse because it was coming out, and they bought it, and it was so disappointing for people, which is really sad because they could have nailed it. But it's hard to make a good game nowadays, man. You got to have a lot of money and to do something like that. But these games hold up, and you can still play them today for sure.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, that's my number one. That was kind of a no-brainer for me at number one. It was just kind of figuring out where the other ones went. So.
Well, my number one is we're going to go back to $99.99, and so it was the most. You know, sometimes we use a little hyperbole on these calls, but you have to remember that, you know, we're going back to, you know, at the time, and so the game that most defined the system for me was the jump with sports games and with visual concepts and the 2K series. So NFL 2K and 2K1. I'm going to talk about 2K only because it was. You know, it came out with a system. It was so unbelievable compared to the Madden games that we had been playing for the previous couple years. It hurt Madden so badly. Now, EA wasn't on the Dreamcast, which is, you know, and talked about in some circles, could be like a contributor to its failure, because EA was burned pretty badly with the Saturn. And so, I mean, the games were on the Saturn, but again, you know, They're producing these games for this dying console that didn't sell well. They're not exactly happy. You know, as the story goes, they negotiate with Sega on this. They want a ridiculous amount of money and whatever else that came with it to be able to even produce their games for it. And Sega told them to, you know, whatever expletive you want to put in here. And because they brought over, they bought Visual Concepts. And so, you know, the 2K series today, it originated, the company that made that, you know, before it became Take-Two Interactive, was Visual Concepts, and Sega bought them right before the Dreamcast came out. They made sports games for the Saturn, so they're often forgotten, right? Non-EA sports games on the Saturn, but they're really good, like World Series Baseball on the Saturn. This is a Visual Concepts that made these. Sega bought them, rebranded them as themselves, and came out with this 2K series, and they destroyed Madden out of the gate. I mean, it made, you know, there's often talk about, like, with competition, and we talk about with wrestling, where it would motivate a company to change. I mean, they made EA
as you're describing this, I'm thinking about that same type of mindset.
Yeah, they made EA, you know, have to change it, and I'm sure they were going to for the PS2, but, I mean, this dunked so badly on the sports games they were putting out, it was no contest. And it's a shame that the system couldn't go on, but... And the one thing they had ahead of its time, too, was 2K1, you could play online. You know, the Dreamcast, I didn't talk about in the beginning, had a built-in modem. Again, way ahead of its time here when it came. Right. We were talking 2000. Well, it was produced in 98, 99. It had a modem in it, a 56K modem. I remember those. So, so it wasn't particularly fast, but you could connect and play. And I'm sure some games had different things where you could download little things and whatnot. And, I never played it online, to be honest with you. Never connected it or dialed it up. It definitely was like a modem. It wasn't like an Ethernet cable or anything like that. It was definitely a modem dial up. Because remember, we didn't talk about like the Sega dial up stuff of the Genesis era, but it was lingering through here. And so, 2K1, NFL 2K1, you could play online, and the games built on each other. It already was like an A-plus game, and they made it even better with 2K1, and it was just our go-to football game. The 2K series, you know, shortly after the system's launch, they came out with NBA 2K, which was a game that was on par or better than what EA was doing for basketball.
I've heard for many years, yes.
Yeah, and now we still play it and look forward to it, and it's the same iteration, you know. So they came out with... I'll talk a little bit more about the sports games here, because this is the one system I did want to talk about it with was, and they came out with hockey, just 2K, and I remember that game being like really hard to score. Like, we were really excited about it, and it just wasn't like great. And then they actually skipped a year, which seems unheard of, and kind of is, and they actually came out with 2K2 NHL, but the console was dead, and they had actually came out with it for GameCube and a whole bunch of other systems too. But that was a pretty good hockey game. And I remember the one other sports memory I have for this was World Series Baseball. So I talked about how great that was on the Saturn. And we were really looking forward to a baseball game on the Dreamcast. And unfortunately, when 2K1 came out in the summer of 2000, because as was the style at the time, sports games were a year ahead with their labeling. They didn't correct that till the mid-2000s. Was this game, they just couldn't get it right out of the gate. They had to get a game out. It was didn't have all the bells and whistles you want. It was an okay arcade baseball game. Like, we really wanted it to be good. And then they came out with a really good baseball game in 2K2. But again, that was and so what happened then was Visual Concepts in 2K, they put those games out for all the other systems. You see them on PS2, even as early as the 2K2 series. So they were out in the Dreamcast. It was a cross-platform series, and they were not exclusive to it because the Dreamcast at that point was dead. But they still put the games out there. So that was 2K in the history of them. And we still know them today because Take-Two Interactive owns them. And then they still put out Borderlands and a whole bunch of other stuff too. But that was kind of the beginnings of that company.
Yeah, it's funny you say the beginnings, because I've been very aware of the fact that in all these episodes we've done, I have not really ranked sports games. I mean, I guess Punch-Out and skateboarding might maybe. But I've always considered myself a fan of sports games, so I was, like, aware of that. I'm like, well, that's weird that I don't rate that. But as we get into further systems, I think we're going to see – I can't guarantee they'll rank, but, you know, PS2, PS3, PS4 is where my sports games really, really rank highly. So, and I think this is kind of where it kind of took that shift. For me, I actually had 2K1. I don't think I ever had 2K. 2K1, did 2K have a franchise mode?
Yes. Yes. Okay. That was a
that
big
was
a, thing.
Something else that was pretty new too.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. It was. Yeah. Madden around 2000 had one too, but yeah, I don't know if it was in 2K or it was 2K1. I think it was in 2K also. Was they had a franchise mode in it, which, you know, again, playing multiple seasons was like, what? You know, I remember because, like, yeah, player advancement stuff, people would retire, yep, stuff like that. I remember like, John Elway was, like, a free agent in the game because he had just retired or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, could you imagine, like, it's so wild for current generation players and maybe kids to think of sports video games that don't have a franchise mode. But, yeah, that's what we had for most of our childhood was you'd play a season.
Yeah.
And then you'd play the season again, where franchise mode carrying stuff over. And gosh, when we get into like college football and the ability to take your college players, that's totally
a PS2 level conversation for me too. Yeah. Pretty heavy one.
Definitely. So I guess maybe that's a tease for where we go next. Yeah. But,
and these ones, they came out with college football too. But again, I mean, the system was gone, but they came out with a NCAA football 2K2, which was the NFL engine with college football on top of it. I remember that.
Yep. Yep. My big thing was, you know, but you could run the option, you know? So
yeah, that's true. Yeah. So that was the 2K sports, and that's why NFL 2K and 2K1 made my list. They are all incredibly cheap. They produced quite a lot of them. I would be curious on, Jordan, do you have the top 5 or 10 selling games on the system?
I do, yeah. I couldn't find, you know, with the previous entries we did, I found like the top 50. This, all I could find is top 10, and a lot of the games we talked about are on there.
Okay.
Number 10 is actually J-League Pro Soccer.
Okay, so that was not a U.S.
I don't know what that is. The image screen is written in Japanese, so.
Yep.
One thing that jumps out at me is the total number of sales is so much smaller for the Dreamcast than other systems.
Yeah, I think they sold 3 million systems in total across all the regions.
Yeah, whereas with
N64,
I mean, Mario itself sold like 10 million consoles.
Or spoiler alert, for PlayStation 2, 150 million consoles. So.
Yeah, insane. Number 9, Virtua Fighter, which is one I kind of had as a maybe an honorable mention. I thought Virtua Fighter was interesting, but not great. Sega Rally Championship racing games suck. We've discussed that.
Yeah, so that's an arcade racer. So I kind of lean to enjoying the Sega Rally, but I did not have it or play it.
Sure. Number 7, Seaman.
Oh, see, there you go. That validates what I said earlier, that it was
big hit. Then coming in number 6 is 2K1, NFL 2K1, which is the first game that on the list that passes a million copies sold.
Yep.
So the top 6 games are the only ones that cross the 1 million mark.
And this makes sense, too, because chronologically, so the system comes out in the fall of 99. And remember, they have all of 2000 to themselves before the PS2 comes out. So they were just rocking out releases. And then this game was so good. You know, now people have bought the system discounted and are coming into 2K1. So it makes sense that a sports game like that would bump up there.
Yeah. A fun little note is I think that Randy Moss was on the cover of every 2K game.
Yeah, just like Allen Iverson was for NBA.
Yeah.
Yep. Back then they hit. Yeah, I like that. It's a great point.
Number 5 is Resident Evil Code Veronica. I never played that one.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you brought that up. I don't have them in my honorable mentions, but they released Resident Evil 2, 3, and Code Veronica for the Dreamcast. So they redid 2 and 3 for the Dreamcast, better versions of the games.
Yeah, probably a good thing that they did that. Yeah. As we talked about that on our last episode.
Well, and those are Capcom games, and Capcom was completely – I mean, they owned this system, and there are a ton of amazing Capcom games, many that we won't even talk about today that are out there. Their library around this time, everything was on the Dreamcast, and nearly everything is good and still good.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it really is. That was number 5. Number 4 is Shenmue, which honestly you probably have to view as a failure. I mean, it sold 1.18 million copies, but as we talked about, it was the most expensive game ever made at that point.
Even if you multiply it by $50 or $40, you're not coming close.
They're still taking a loss there. Yeah. So what's funny is the image there is Shenmue holding the soccer ball, which I forgot that you can play soccer in that game too. So. Number 3 is NFL 2K. So okay. 2K and 2K1 are both in the top 6.
Nice.
Number 2, Crazy Taxi.
There you go.
And the number one is a game we didn't talk about, but no big surprise. Sonic Adventure is the number one selling game of all time for the Dreamcast. So,
yeah.
Of course, Sonic.
Yeah, that's great. So 3D Sonic, I'm not surprised. And again, so talking about releases, you know, on the launch day, there's Sonic and NFL 2K were right out of the gate.
I am surprised Ready to Rumble wasn't on there. Maybe because PS2 maybe a little more successful there, but you mentioned Ready to Rumble Boxing.
Yeah, I mean, that was a release one, so it was exclusive to Dreamcast. I mean, I think Ready to Rumble Round 2 came out multi-platform because Midway, they were spamming whoever they could get the system on, the game onto. The one thing I remember with was it Ready to Rumble that had, like, I know there were some issues with audio in Ready to Rumble, which is one of the little stumbling things out of the gate. They actually reprinted it, and some of the games have, like, a sticker on it, so you know it was one of the reprinted ones that that didn't have, like, the audio glitching out in it. Just a small hiccup in the release window in there. Yeah, I'm surprised that one didn't come out, too. That was a real popular game starting it out. What other honorable mentions did you have that you wanted to talk about?
Us. So I did have Virtua Tennis on there, which we talked about already. One that I wanted to just mention briefly, I don't have much to say about it, was Dead or Alive 2, I remember owning. Mm. And this was kind of like a Mortal Kombat game. Basically Mortal Kombat with boobs.
Yeah. I mean, no weapons. It was 3D fighting, but not with weapons, but with boobs.
But they put a lot of the 3D emphasis on certain parts, and it definitely appealed to, you know, the 20-year-old version of me. I don't know that it would.
And his reputation has carried on for years, decades, even 15 years later.
Yes. Yeah, and that's kind of why I wanted to mention it, not because it's necessarily a good game, but we're talking about memorable games, and this is one that,
I remember that too.
And didn't they make, like, a volleyball version of that game as well?
Yeah, they did, for the Xbox PS2 era, I think.
Maybe. Yeah, so if you're one of those people that's, like, looking for some titillating games.
And no other means of finding that.
Seaman is not what you're looking
for.
No. Ready to Rumble Boxing, we've already discussed. That was on my honorable mention. I wrote this down just because I remember it was so stupid. You know what Razor Scooters are? They're like these little silver, I guess it's like a skateboard with the handlebars.
Okay.
They had a Razor Scooter video game for the Dreamcast, and I just remember thinking that was one of the dumbest things in the world. and I think it was just kind of trying to copy the success of Tony Hawk.
Sure.
We talked about Mira BMX, but then they made it for Razor Scooters. So if you're not sure what a Razor Scooter is, Google it when you get off the line here. And if you're listening, Google what a Razor Scooter is, and then imagine a video game based off. Like, it's kind of embarrassing as an adult to ride a race. It's like for children.
Sure.
You know, so just imagine the fact that somebody's like, let's make a video game of that. Not the best idea.
No.
So, NFL 2K was on my honorable mention. We already talked about that. So basically, a lot of my honorable mentions we've already discussed.
Okay.
So how about you? Anything that didn't make your list?
Yeah, so I had two other ones. So we talked about Power Stone in the release window. So Power Stone was a Capcom game, which was, again, with up to the four players. I'm trying to think, like, I guess like a little bit of like a MOBA game that you see today, four players at the same time trying to knock each other out, like with interactive environments. Yeah. And it was a really popular game. They came out with a sequel. It was super late in the Dreamcast life. It's super expensive. If you have it today, get in touch with me. It's actually not expensive. It's not worth anything. No, the Power Stone 2 was kind of building off. It's a real unique game at the time. They actually came out with both of them on the PSP as a compilation too, which you can find some places. So Power Stone, again, another Capcom game, totally different than what their normal fighters were, and really unique. And then the other one I wanted to talk about was Jet Grind Radio. And so I had this weird memory where, like, I guess it came out in Japan first. This isn't a revelation. You check the numbers, a couple months at least. And I remember my buddy had got it, and he made a copy of it or whatever. And it was called Jet Set Radio, but they couldn't use that name in the U.S. It was copyrighted already. And I remember playing a lot of Jet Set Radio. So this is another game that I didn't play enough of it to make it on my list, but it really defines the Dreamcast. You see it in different Dreamcast collections. This is a game that Sega is pretty proud of. It didn't particularly sell great, but it has a pretty good reputation. And so you're riding around on roller skates and graffitiing, tagging things, And while you're escaping bad guys or fighting them running around, it was super cool, super unique, a lot of fun. And I definitely recommend checking that one out if you haven't seen it. It's another one that made its way to your Xbox Live Arcade and PSNs in the mid-2000s, late 2000s, too, that you can find in relatively later consoles. So.
Okay. There was one more that I wanted to talk about just for us. In our last episode, you had mentioned Parappa the Rapper.
Yes.
And we kind of started on the trail of rhythm games.
Yes.
So you know where I'm going?
Yeah, this is one we should talk about. Yeah.
So rhythm games, I will probably talk about when we get to PlayStation 2. I'm going to talk about a rhythm game specifically. No real surprise of which one that's going to be. But
I am also.
Dreamcast had one called Samba de Amigo.
Oh, okay.
And it was. Is this what you thought I was talking about?
I thought you were talking about Space Channel 5, which was the Michael Samba Jackson de Amigo. Influenced rhythm.
Yeah, Samba de Amigo was different because it was a rhythm game that required you to plug a maraca into the controller port. And that was your rhythm, was you're this monkey that plays the maracas. I always admire games like that, that just, even if they kind of fall on their face, it's so outside the box, and it's so different than anything. Like, it had maracas that you plugged into the remote, you know, that you plugged into the controller. So, okay, so talk about the one that you thought I was going to say.
Well, I will say for Samba de Amigo, is that game, they brought that back for the Wii.
Yeah,
because obviously they got the motion controller.
Very cartoony, very colorful.
Yeah.
I mean,
and he was one of the mascots too. One of the games with one of the Sega things that I really like is some of the racing games they've put out since then, like Sonic All-Star Racing, Transformed, and stuff. Where Sega will use all their different worlds that they've created over the years. And Samba de Amigo is that little monkey is a character that they definitely push.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely very noticeable with his little sombrero and his maracas and his big giant grin. So. Yeah.
Space Channel 5, real quick, I didn't play it. I haven't played it. But again, it was, I mean, it's a rhythm game to my, I think it was button inputting, though. And it was another one that made like those Dreamcast collections and was one of the games that Sega was pushing, you know, 10 years later with different systems. So, and I remember Michael Jackson had some creative influence over that game. So there you go.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't have that one. So
I didn't have it originally, the game, though. But I do know that it was pretty popular.
I mostly just wanted to mention Samba because rhythm games kind of were invented with the last system. Maybe not invented. I mean, they had Mario Paint all the way back at Super Nintendo, but that wasn't really a rhythm game. Right. But we're kind of moving towards a pretty big explosion in that genre with our next episode.
And Samba de Amigo and Space Channel 5, they fit into the quirkiness that was the Dreamcast, where you're not going to find. Well, you will find some of these games later on. So what?
Nintendo embraced all that.
Yeah,
stuff,
Nintendo embraced that stuff, and so what happened with Sega then to wrap is so they, obviously they stopped production of the system. It was losing money for them, but they stayed afloat and they still produce games today, and so they just took their library and stuff in development. And they either multi-platformed it out to PS2, or some of those games were unique to the Xbox. And as the story goes, and it was only really a preliminary thing, there's no model that exists, but there were discussions between Microsoft and Sega that the original Xbox would be Dreamcast backwards compatible. But they couldn't make it work price-wise with what they needed to include with it. Because again, the Dreamcast used a Microsoft operating system, and Microsoft, so there you go. And so the Xbox, so a lot of games that would have come out on the Dreamcast had it survived, made its way to the Xbox. Games like Crazy Taxi 3, High Roller, Panzer Dragoon Orta was a game. Panzer Dragoon was a Sega series, and that game came out for the Xbox. It would have been a Dreamcast game. There's more than that, and now I blanked on them. But you can find lists of just that, maybe even on Wikipedia, of like Sega games for Xbox. Shenmue 2 was another one.
Sure.
A big one for sure. And I have my library is blocked right now, so I can't see what else I was thinking of there. But so some of those games that came over would have been on the Dreamcast, but they said put them out on the Xbox. And they're kind of like a fun subset of games because they carried on some of the quirkiness that Sega was doing over the years. So, goodbye Sega consoles. There it was, the Dreamcast. Definitely one of my favorite. 2 years of just jam-packed games. they hold up today. The system is not expensive. It did not. I mean, most systems don't, you know, gain. Certainly not from an MSRP standpoint. There's a lot of consoles out there, even if they didn't sell them, and they were traded in pretty quickly. So you can get them fairly easily. Yeah, one of the downfalls of having them be copying and being able to play this, it would put a little bit more strain on the laser. So some of them may not work as well as they once did. You could really grind them out and burn it out pretty fast, which is a deterrent to wanting to do that even today. But yeah, you can find them around in the library outside of a lot of those Capcom games late in its release. They're pretty expensive games like Cannon Spike and Giga Wing 2. Like, these were shooters that Capcom and other companies, Capcom brought in that were, you know, very low print runs that they go for $80, $90 today. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think more than anything, if there's anything we take away from the Dreamcast, it's that as fans of gaming, really, I guess fans of anything, just because something didn't see commercial success, doesn't mean it's not quality. You know, in a lot of ways, I guess commercially, the Dreamcast was probably a flop.
Right.
But we both speak of it very highly, and I know that we're not the only ones. You know, just in our Place to Be live chats. There are people who are looking at finding an old Dreamcast, just kind of reliving those memories. So don't just go by what the crowd said. Go try stuff out for yourself and see if it's worth playing. I think you'll find the Dreamcast is a really, really quality system.
Absolutely. That's a great way to end. And so we'll talk about what's next. So what was the system that put them out of business for sure was the behemoth that was the PlayStation 2. As I talked to earlier, 150 million. It's the greatest sold system of all time. I don't think it will ever be beat. So it was. That's up next for us as we move into a next gaming generation. We will tackle PlayStation 2.
Spoiler: Fantavision, my number one game.
I actually have Fantavision, or at least a copy.
So did I.
Yeah, I
did
have it. Or at least that was one of the. They released that for PS4. Yeah.
Oh, really? I had
a backwards compatible, like the PS2 classics they have out there. This sounds like we stopped recording and we just kept talking, but we're still talking. The PS2 is a vast library, which is going to make it a little bit more challenging. I mean, personally, like I said earlier, with these shorter lifespans for systems makes it a little bit more unique when you talk about these. The PlayStation is going to be pretty challenging with 4 just because of the number of games that came out is incredible, to be honest.
That's huge.
But we'll get there next time, though, and so we will. Yep. We'll talk to everybody again real soon.
Marvel vs. Capcom 2: New Age of Heroes.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, along with Main Event, Survey Says, the Monday Night Wars, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, as well as Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network podcasts and pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Match of the Week podcast, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Through the Years, Worldcast, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Center Stage, and Letters from Kayfabe, plus much more. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as Talkin' Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, NBA Team, PTBN Play, Sunday Groove, Breaking Balls, and Lucha Undead,
as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans
with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and Marvel Age Podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We'll be right back.